the National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is tape 14, side 25. Gabrielle Dinman interviewing Dr. Walter Jacob, February 7, 1997.
I have to
set
down the other.
I have to figure it out. Well, anyway, it's the continuation. I'm getting silly. Rabbi Jacob, you were telling us about your role as Oberrabbiner in Munich. Please continue.
Okay. The effort really is, let me describe the effort and then deal a little bit with what they did as far as installing me as Oberrabbiner. And also a little bit more of the background of the community. There's a very skilled and able group of lay people that are leading the community in Munich, particularly an brilliant, highly dedicated young man by the name of Dr. Walter Homolka. Yes. He is an individual who really feels that Reform Judaism must move ahead and has put tremendous energy into this. He studied at the Leo Beck College in London, did not finish, came very close to finishing, then decided he was more interested in pursuing a doctorate, but will now complete that, and so he will become a German rabbi. He is now... I believe 33 years old. He is the chief of staff of the president of the largest German publishing house, Bertelsmann, and has immense worldwide responsibilities, but has devoted himself also to the Reform movement. And he is the kind of person who gets things done. I think I mentioned the prayer book previously, did I?
I think you did. I'm not sure.
If
you
I
said
didn't,
it to us.
Let me mention that
H-O-M-O-L-K-A.
H-O-M-O-L-K-A. He's a Jew of Czech Jewish descent. So this, one of the things that was needed was a prayer book, because people have been using pamphlets and remnants of prayer books, pre-war liberal prayer books. So instead of going the route that we have taken, which usually takes anywhere from 5 to 10 years, we looked at the English Jewish Reform prayer book, edited by Jonathan Maginette, the principal of the Leo Beck College, and saw that it needed some changes, but not many. Found somebody to do a German translation, happens to be a Lutheran, who did this as a token of Wiedergutmachung, I suppose, for the Jewish community. Actually, a very young woman. Who did this out of the kindness of her heart, feeling that one should do these kinds of things for the Jewish community. And the prayer book was printed trilingually so that it can be used for international conventions. But the whole process was finished in 3 months. And the book is out, has sold 1,000 copies in softback, is now going into a hardback edition, and a holiday prayer book is being prepared. So, you know, this is a person who is not going to let any grass grow under his feet.
When you say trilingual, will you tell us what the language?
It's Hebrew, German, and English. That how necessary that was shown to me by the convention of the World Union I attended in Geneva, which had people from Spain, from Switzerland, from Belgium, from France, from Holland, from Germany, from the United States and from the Ukraine. So the only language we had in common, the only languages we had in common were Hebrew and English, nothing else. And so he is a man filled with energy, and one of the things he did to and I was part of that too, to put this group on the map, they sponsored this little group of 130 people, a major symposium on Leo Beck, on the anniversary of the 50th anniversary of his death, with a dozen, 15, I guess, major scholars in a large hall in Munich. Hundreds of people attended, most of them not Jewish. Attendance was, at some of the meetings, over 500.
What year was this, last year?
Last November. And as part of that, also a magnificent concert. And he wasn't going to simply do this as a one-session thing. Just sent me a CD of that concert. So that's been produced and is out in record stores all over Germany. So this is the kind of individual that one needs to get a movement going. But there are other people too. The president of that community, a woman, Lauren Reed, is also very energetic, as are the vice president and the other people involved, Dr. Neustein and others. What they've done, and I've tried to help a little bit in this, is all the communities, the 20 of them, are going to get together and form a unit to represent themselves to the state governments, the various state governments, and to the national government. And this, of course, means that they will be immensely strengthened very, very quickly. Secondly, they are in the process of setting up a common conversion course, which will take place on weekends in a central point in Germany, to which people can travel and spend the weekend studying Judaism, and in that way become educated. Because to try to do this in these little communities where there is nobody to teach is virtually impossible. So that will help that along. Secondly, in 3 weeks or so, the European Beit Din, the European Rabbinic Court, Reform Rabbinic Court, is going to meet to deal with how to set things up in Germany, not for the conversion course, but for the conversion process at the end of the course. So things are moving. We're also in the process of, with a couple of other individuals, assembling a library of Jewish books which represent Judaism from the liberal point of view, in German, of course. There are plenty of books on Judaism published in Germany. Most of them are scholarly, and the rest are Orthodox. And the reading public, of course, is largely non-Jewish. So my part in all this is to see what I can do to help matters coalesce, to move things along, give some advice, and to go over and teach and meet with people whenever that's desirable. One of the other things I've tried to do here is get Torahs for these new communities. And we have given one on a long-term loan. Steubenville is doing the same thing. So will a few others. Let me tell you what they did, or did I do that before?
No.
To so to speak, install me as their senior rabbi. They wanted to do this in a way that would provide them with status as a community and cause a bit of a splash. So, you know, as far as I was concerned, just going over and teaching and leading a service or two, that was quite enough. But no, they wanted to do this in a different way. So would I agree? All right. That means harmless.
Tell us.
So they arranged for a meeting with the Lord Mayor, and there was a champagne reception with little speeches, which of course I had to answer. Then there was a meeting with the Cardinal, where I explained Reformed Judaism to him. And then a meeting with the Lutheran Bishop, explained Reformed Judaism to him. And then about a dozen sessions with reporters, radio, and that sort of thing, with all kinds of questions. Also a meeting with the Vice President of the Orthodox Community, who wanted to know, you know, what was happening, what we were planning to do. And we were, you know, very upfront, as simply indicated. We wanted recognition. Eventually we wanted financial support. And that meant that after a while we would need a building and all the other facilities. And there's good precedent for that, because the German Jewish community before the war was about 80-85% Reformed, but there were always provisions made for the Orthodox, with either separate synagogues or small meeting rooms, possibly scattered throughout the city so that people would not have trouble walking to them, and all of that. They also wanted the Reformed community a responsum which would justify this on a rabbinic basis. So I wrote them, I think, a 15-page responsum, which cites all the possible sources and indicates quite clearly that this kind of pluralism has been part of Jewish life for thousands of years.
When you talk about financial support, you don't mean it, does?
Yes.
You do mean it.
What happens?
Does? Go on.
What happens in Germany, not in every state, but in most of the states of Germany, is that there is a religious tax which is added onto your income tax. And that goes to the religious affiliate, the group with which you are affiliated. And you need not pay that tax if you opt out. So if you are Jewish, you go to the tax bureau and say, I no longer wish to be considered part of the Jewish community, then you don't have to pay that tax. But if you go to them and say, I wish my tax to go to the liberal Jewish community, they will say, that isn't the way we do it. We distribute this to the general Jewish body. The general Jewish body then has to decide what they want to do with it. So that's where the politics is, and that's where the problems are. I ought to say something also about the nature of the post-war Jewish community, the individuals from Eastern Europe, who were all, I think I mentioned this before too, they were Orthodox, but tolerant Orthodox, not fanatics. So if somebody did not quite hew the line, all right, they were willing to accept that. And I think I mentioned that when I came, was invited as a Reformed rabbi to preside over the rededication of my late father's synagogue in Augsburg, there was no problem. The president was a tolerant Orthodox individual. But the fact that I was a Reformed rabbi, that was all right. But, and I think I also mentioned that he first gave me the courage to speak off the cuff in German. You know, without,
you didn't tell us about
it. Well, when I was invited, I of course very carefully prepared a dedication, a speech. And I had never given a speech, I talked German, but never given a speech in German. On the Saturday before, there was a service, and in the middle of that service, he gave a few remarks it was sort of German. It was really much more Yiddish than German. And then asked me if I wanted to give a little sermon on the Torah portion. Well, I was not prepared to do that. But after hearing him, I figured I would do better than he. It proved not to be difficult. I mean, the only time it was a little difficult was during this champagne reception with the Lord Mayor, because we had just flown in from Cologne, gotten up real early in the morning, and I'm not accustomed to drinking champagne at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then to also find the right vocabulary and the right synonym took a little doing.
But that's a Munich, the Lord Mayor sort of that.
Yes. But Augsburg, by the way, is just 20 minutes ride from Munich. So when I talked to the community and when I was officially installed, which was, by the way, they made a big to-do about that. There was a big service with a full choir. It was an impressive service. This was a 40-person choir. It was a magnificent choir. Two cantors, two rabbis, the president of the Leo Beck College in London, and everybody in robes and so on. What was funny, was really funny, was that Dr. Homolka, who was in charge of it, said, "We have to distinguish you from the rest of the people here." So when I got there to the back of this, to the room where we were supposed to be robed, he had a red robe. It was really...
He sounds like he's dynamite.
Yes. Well, during that speech, I made reference to the last rabbi of Munich, whom I knew personally, and whom I visited. He had been our guest often in Augsburg, and whom I visited in the 1940s in New York. His name was Beerbohm. So there was a personal connection between, you know, this Munich community now and the pre-war Munich community.
So you, obviously, this will grow and be a viable.
It will not only grow and be viable, yeah, but it will grow rapidly. And the main problem is going to be leadership. We are sending, I think we've sent two students now to study in London.
From
Germany.
Oh, from Germany.
And we need about 20. I think that Homolka, through his example of being a young, dynamic, energetic, imaginative person, will inspire others to go that route.
And the Leo Beck Institute would be a counted part of the being involved. Leo Beck for Europe, right?
Well, the Leo Beck College is now 25 years old, so it's well established. It has the advantage, has two advantages. If you send somebody there from Germany, you can send them back, let's say, once a month, easily, and have them be in touch with the community and be helpful to the community. The second is that when people come to the United States, they tend to stay. And that's really counterproductive. So realizing full well that in Germany, you're a pioneer. But if you're not a pioneer as one of two or three or half a dozen, but if you're a pioneer with 15 or 20 others, it should be much easier. And the Orthodox establishment in Germany is going to weaken. It's going to weaken rapidly because the people are not with them. And this is not like Israel, where you have a government that supports, for political reasons, a religious orthodoxy. In Germany, the government does its level best to stay neutral. They don't want to get into this fight. And when the community council tips in the direction of reform, it's perfectly possible that in some of the larger cities, the main synagogue will be turned over to the reform community at some point, because they will say, look, we have a bigger attendance than you do. We'll supply you with a smaller synagogue somewhere.
How do you feel about government and religious?
Well, it's a different system.
It's a different system.
And
it works?
It works.
It's fair?
It's fair, and it certainly is fair now. I remember my, you know, in I don't know whether there is religious instruction in the schools. There used to be.
There used to be.
Yes, and my father gave it as long as Jewish children went to public schools, which ended in 35. My grandfather constantly did that. There were clearly schools in which there were no, or very few Jewish children, or no Jewish children. My grandfather insisted that my father go to such a school in order to make sure that they understood that Jews were really to be involved everywhere. So he went, in spite of being in a much larger community, grew up in a setting that was not different from Springfield, Missouri, where, you know, there were also no Jews coming to school.
Excuse me, could you clarify one thing? I think this part was clear. What you're saying is that in Germany, it is voluntary whether you pay the religious tax. If you decide to leave your religion,
it's not voluntary. It's normally added to your tax.
Right.
If you don't want to pay that, or if you decide that you're not religious, one of those two reasons, you can go to the tax office. But you cannot simply say, I don't want to pay it. What you have to say is, I don't want to pay it because I am no longer a Catholic or a Jew. And, you know, people are unlikely to want to do that.
But it's available. It's possible.
Yes.
Do you have any other thing to add about your Jews in Germany currently? I know you evolved.
It's still evolving, so I can't really add too much. This little community in Munich is also going to host the next meeting of the European World Union. It was in Geneva. It'll be in Munich next year. It's an ambitious project. It'll work, and I'm involved with some of that planning. And we will also have a concurrent meeting of the Law Institute, in which we will have papers presented on the theme, which will be next year's theme, which are gender issues in Judaism.
Is that the Law Institute for Jewish Law?
Yeah, the Friedhof Institute for Progressive Halacha. We'll have a session in Germany with presentations probably both in German and in English. And there are lots of other things that will happen too, and also things that will happen to me. For example, next year I've been invited for next spring, probably next April, to lecture at the University of Potsdam, and to spend, I won't spend a whole semester there because that's longer than I can, but I'll certainly spend 4 or 5 weeks there.
And what will you teach?
Probably teach on Jewish law and give some specialized lectures. And I'm working with some people on some German publications. I was part of a book on conversion, which appeared last year, and the English edition will appear this year. I'm one of the editors of that. You know, there are lots of things like that, too. I'll participate in lots of dialogues once my schedule is a little clearer. I already have received lots of invitations, but can't really participate without knowing that. And this has nothing to do with that, but I should mention that the next fall there'll be a symposium in Hamburg, your city, on Benno Jacob.
Your plan?
Yes. A whole series of papers, and I think I mentioned to you that a street in Dortmund, the city where he functioned as rabbi, has been named in his honor, and there will be another symposium in 1998, in fall of 98, for which I'm also supplying some photographs and some other material. So there are, you know, there are constant series of things that happen, and one thing leads to the next. It's going to be busy, and it's going to be interesting. And people in Germany, or I can't say everybody in Germany, but lots of people are very receptive to studying about Judaism and to working together on common projects.
Do you think other American rabbis will become involved in this?
I'm trying to get some others involved. Some are reluctant because they have stronger feelings about going back to Germany. Well, you have to know German. There's no use being an American rabbi if you don't know German. There are a handful of such individuals, you know, my age or a little older, hardly anybody younger. Some are reluctant because of family reasons. You know, they just don't want to spend a lot of time there. So the pool from which one can draw is extremely small. I can only think of three or four possible individuals, and two of those have opted out. So it's going to be difficult.
It's interesting. Let me just see how much.
One should also understand that the governing body in each city is the Jewish community, the Jüdische Gemeinde, and all groups supposedly belong to that. So there would be an Orthodox element, a Reform element, as well as groups that stand outside of those circles. Like there would be a group representing, let's say, the Home for the Aged, or a sports club, or whatever. It's a different pattern of organization than here. And theoretically, everything should be organized first within this group and then spread out. But practically, with this Reform community, because there was no ability to gain any recognition, they formed themselves outside and are now knocking on the door. And of course, the Orthodox segment, which controls the Gemeinde, hoped that they would go away for ideological reasons and for practical reasons.
But the federation is there to stay, and it'll involve in the
this
same.
This is not a federation. This is not the equivalent of a federation,
okay,
which is a voluntary body.
Okay.
This is a government recognized body. Organized along specified lines that are specified by law.
The Jüdische Gemeinde.
Yes.
And that'll evolve the same way as everything else is evolving at this point, where Reform Judaism is becoming more dominant than the Orthodox. So, okay.
Yes, that'll happen. It's a repetition of what happened in the middle of the last century. Hopefully, people will learn from what happened then and not put up a tremendous fight which they're bound to lose.
You mentioned some, I know you didn't do it on tape. You mentioned some feeling of prejudice between the two different groups. Was that something that you...
Well, the prejudice, that's a funny thing, because the Jews who arrived in 1940 from Poland, Ukraine, and Russia now look down on the Jews who arrived in 1990 from Poland, Ukraine, and Russia. And it's funny because, you know, when this happened in the United States, well, all right, you had Jews who at least came from two different countries, from Germany and from Russia. Not that that's a good excuse for looking down on people, but as they have come from precisely the same places, it's humorous to think of it.
Do you ever address that in the sermon? Or? you just ignore it, which is not ignore, I mean, just so that you don't want to make an issue of it, or?
Well, it is an issue, but I don't think it's, you know, you address it, yeah, you talk about it obliquely and then try to deal with it in a practical sense, particularly with young people, try to get them integrated and working together.
Okay, I think that's, any other comments on this reminder? Or?
No, you see, you also have to remember that there are things that you can do if you live, that you could do if you live there, that you can't do if you come as a visitor, and vice versa. I mean, you can say things sometimes if you're going to leave that you would be hard put to say if you're going to stay.
Yeah. And you evidently had no objection. They didn't object to the fact that you wouldn't live in Munich, and they accepted you as Oberhabine. They had no choice. Is that what you're saying? Because our tape can't read your body language.
No, they knew that.
Yeah.
They knew that before they talked to me about that. And